Hi everyone. Welcome to another episode of the AICPA Personal Financial Planning Podcast. I'm Andrea Miller, and here we are in our third year of delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment, client service, and practice management topics. Be sure to visit us at AICPA.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Andrea. This is Bob Keebler, and I'm here today with attorney Steve Brightstone and Mary O'Reilly to discuss the grantor retained income partnership, a relatively new technique that will be very powerful in the next 2 months while Americans determine exactly what to gift away. Some of your clients are not going to be in a position to gift away a lot of property, but yet they want to use up unified credit to protect their family from the estate tax in the future. Welcome, Mary and Steve, from the firm of Meltzer, Lippe, Goldstein, and Brightstone. Steve and Mary are two of the leading experts on a strategy called the GRIP. And the GRIP has suddenly come into vogue because of the potential reduction of the exemption under a Biden administration. So what we're looking at is, here's the main issue, is a couple is wealthy enough to have an estate tax problem, but not so wealthy that they can give away all their property. So all of us for years have thought about, how do we protect the exemption while keeping an interest in that property that won't be included in the taxable estate? So Steve, let's start with, what is a GRIP, including what the acronym stands for, and then paint for us a picture of what this strategy is?
Okay. So I have to give Mary credit for the acronym GRIP, which I really like. It's a grantor retained interest partnership. And what it is a freeze partnership that does not comply with Section 2701, so that it creates a deemed gift of the entire value of the partnership to the recipient of the common interest. This effectively allows you to lock in the exemption. The deemed gift would use the exemption, currently $11,580,000, and that is the maximum amount of non-taxable gift you can make. Upon death, there's a provision that applies in the 2701 regulations, which is a mitigation rule to prevent double taxation. And under this mitigation rule, you get to reduce the taxable estate by the lesser of the amount of the deemed gift that occurred or the then fair market value of the retained interest. And that would be, let's say, the preferred interest in the freeze partnership. So that way, the exemptions, even if Congress reduces the exemption, the amount of the mitigation adjustment that applies is based upon the amount of exemption used now, not based upon what the exemption might be in the future.
Mary, why would someone use a GRIP?
Well, you know, like you said, you may have a married couple that, you know, doesn't want to give away those assets right now, but they want to use their exemption. Or you may even have, you know, a single person who's not married, and so they can't use a SLAT, which is, you know, a technique we're using a lot right now to take advantage of the exemption. So, you know, the GRIP is really the only strategy that we know where you can use your gift exemption today, lock in this increased exemption without really having to give up the asset, right? So, you know, with the GRIP, you form this GRIP partnership and you fund it with assets equal to your exemption, but you retain that preferred interest. And that preferred interest can be structured in a way that's really flexible to you. So you can retain the right to receive back whatever you put into that partnership, whatever that value was. You can receive the right back to a return, and there's lots of flexibility in drafting it for, you know, so for those clients that want to give away an asset for purposes of the exemption, but not for purposes of losing access to those assets, it's a great strategy. Another major benefit of the GRIP, that say you don't get with using SLATs, is that because you retain this preferred interest in the GRIP, it's included in your taxable estate, right? So when you pass away, that interest is still yours. You still own it. And so you get a full step up in basis. Yet, because of the mitigation rule that, you know, acknowledges that, well, when you established this GRIP back in 2020, you were already treated as if you paid the tax on it, or at least use your exemption, so we're not going to tax you again when you pass away. So that preferred interest is included in the estate for the step-up, yet it's not included. You get a reduction so that it's not increasing your taxable estate. So, you know, depending on the type of assets that are in the GRIP, if you have highly appreciated assets, that's another great benefit of it.
So, Steve, what are some of the features that you would commonly put into a GRIP partnership agreement?
We have a lot of options. If we're not subject to the constraints of Section 2701 on how you can structure the partnership, we have a lot of flexibility. So Section 2701, for example, requires you to have a qualified payment stream on the preferred stock, which means a preferred interest, which means a payment that's fixed and payable annually, or if it's not paid, it accrues and is cumulative, must be paid within 4 years. There's another requirement is that you have to have junior equity interest that's worth at least 10%. None of those requirements apply when you're doing a GRIP. So simplified, if we want to create a freeze partnership with preferred and common, the preferred being the frozen interest and the common being what we would give away to the next generation for that will entail the appreciation, we might just use the normal features of a freeze partnership, but instead of making the qualified payments cumulative, we might provide that they're only payable if there's income to pay them, and that any amount not paid doesn't necessarily carry forward and get accumulated to be paid in a subsequent year. And this gives us, obviously, a lot more flexibility in terms of structuring, because it's hard sometimes to structure a freeze partnership so that it has enough income to reliably make those qualified payments. Here, the payments can be made only if and when there's cash available, and that's perfectly fine because we're going to flunk 2701 intentionally and create the deemed gift.
So, Mary, can you walk us through an example of how a GRIP would work for a client? What control do they have? How can they access the assets in the partnership?
Sure. Let's say, for example, you know, you have a client that has $10 million of remaining gift tax exemption that they want to utilize, right? So imagine he takes assets equal to $10 million, right? And that could be anything. It could be stocks, bonds, investment, real estate, interest in their business, cash, right? Whatever assets they want to do planning with. And by the way, if those are assets that are in closely held entities that would normally be subject to discounts in the type of planning we generally do, well then, you know, that discount's taken into account when you put them into the GRIP structure as well. So when we're talking about the $10 million, that would, you know, include any discounts that would be applied to those assets, right? So the client contributes $10 million of assets, they put it into the GRIP partnership, and they take back that preferred interest. And let's imagine, you know, you structure it in a way that they want to get back their rights to that initial $10 million contribution, that they could get that back in a liquidation. And they want to have a preferred payment structured as a rate of return. It could be a number that they want, 5%, 6%, you know, you pick it. Or it could be a rate that's subject to inflation. This way, you know, if they're worried, well, what if interest rates really go up? Right now, 5% is enough. It may not be enough at a later date. So very flexible in how they want to structure that. And the key, as Steve said, though, is that preferred payment that comes back cannot be cumulative, right? So, you know, as Steve mentioned, one way to do that is if in a given year the partnership doesn't have enough earnings to fully pay back, let's imagine the 6% rate of return, well, then they don't get that full amount back that year. And the next year, they don't get it either, right? It simply lapses, right? And so any appreciation over whatever the client has retained, right, that's initial $10 million plus the 6% rate of return, any appreciation over that goes to the common interest. And the client gifts the common interest. And that's where, because the entire value of the partnership is attributable to the common interest under the special valuation rules of 2701, that's how you make that $10 million gift, which you now have to file a gift tax return and use your $10 million exemption today, right? And so, by the way, this is a nice freeze technique, just like our other techniques that we use in estate planning. You know, if you're able to get assets in at a discount, and that rate of return, you can control how much it is. You know, all that appreciation, by the way, you can pass to the common interest. So let's imagine the partnership is going and it's earning money. The client's getting back his rate of returns in the year where it has the liquidity to give it. And, you know, the question comes up, well, what if the client wants to get back some of that $10 million? The rate of return isn't enough. They have a big expense. And, you know, I would just say you should pause before taking and getting a liquidation preference back on your initial contribution, just because don't take it back unless you're going to spend it, right? Because the way that mitigation adjustment upon your death works is you only get the adjustment to the extent you have value in your preferred interest. So if you're going to take $2 million out of the preferred partnership and just stick it into a bank account in your name, well, you've just increased your taxable estate by $2 million because you're not going to be able to reduce that $2 million since it's no longer in the freeze partnership. So, you know, what I would say is before you kind of dive in and try to get back your principal, make sure, you know, you've spent your other assets. You know, it's better off. Unless you need to spend it, leave it in there. If you're going to spend it, then by all means, you can do that.
So upon a client's death, Steve, can you explain how the adjustment to mitigate double taxation works in the estate, and then kind of even to some extent just how maybe people would be able to see it easier too if we talked a little bit about how it fits on the estate tax return?
Okay, well, the regulations under section 25-2701-5 actually contain a very clear example, and what example 2 under those regulations basically provides that on the estate tax return, you reduce your estate subject to taxation by the amount, what they call the mitigation amount. And the mitigation amount is the lesser of the amount of the deemed gift at the, you know, when you set up the GRIP. Or, as Mary said, if the preferred interest retained goes down in value, then that becomes the amount of the adjustment. I would say that it's a little unclear if you withdraw proceeds or if withdraw, let's say, refinancing distributions or some of the principal that you put into the GRIP, that it necessarily increases your estate, because I would argue that is just transforming the interest that you retained into another asset that's in the estate. And I think it's within the intent of these rules, although it's not spelled out very clearly, but it's with the intent of these rules that if the asset is going to be in your estate, it's probably not going to be taxed on death because of this mitigation rule. If in fact the preferred interest does decline in value because of the performance of the underlying investments, that would reduce the amount subject to the mitigation rule, the amount of the mitigation adjustment. But at that point, you're still not being taxed on the asset that you had this deemed transfer. So it's not really a penalty. It's just simply a mechanical rule. You need less mitigation, so you get less mitigation.
Got it. And so, Mary, what about clawback? Would a potential clawback of the exemption impact planning with a GRIP?
Well, you know, we really don't see that as a major risk to this transaction, you know, any more than any other kind of gifting we're doing in 2020. You know, I think the anti-clawback regs that came out, you know, make it clear that gifts that you make during this increased exemption period are not going to be brought back into your estate and subject to tax at your passing. You know, in the case of the GRIP, as Steve explained, you know, the code directs that this adjustment be given, and the regs spell it out under 2701-5, you know, exactly how your estate is reduced. And so, you know, I don't see how a clawback, you know, would be any, specifically targeted towards the GRIP rather than just, you know, any clawback in general. You know, I guess I don't see there's any more risk in doing this than with any other kind of planning with the clawback risk.
It's our view that unless Treasury actually changes the clawback regulations, that this technique is not impacted by the clawback rules.
So finally, Steve, what are the negatives of using the grantor-retained partnership here? What can go wrong, and what? Why might somebody regret this?
Well, the first thing that we run across in trying to apply this to a given situation is that it is not an effective or efficient way of transferring assets that will be generation skipping. The deemed gift under Section 2701 inflates the amount of assets that use the exemption, and that's a good thing for in terms of locking in our estate and gift tax exemption. But it doesn't work that way for the generation skipping purposes. There is no Section 2701 in the GST, and there's no mitigation rule in the GST. So we don't think that you ought to use this technique for generation skipping trusts, for example, where the junior equity is going to go into a generation skipping trust. We might couple this technique with other techniques, for example, setting up spousal Q-tip trusts, inter vivos Q-tip trusts that make a reverse Q-tip election to use the generation skipping exemption and lock it in that way. But it's not an easy fit to use the GST exemption on the GRIP. The other concern that we have is the flexibility of the GRIP, which is tremendous and a big advantage of it. But be careful what you use this for, because it's still subject to the risk of inclusion under Section 2036 if there's too many strings to the partnership, too many strings to the assets of the partnership, free rein to withdraw monies from the partnership. If you have the technique works really well if we're freezing the assets, we're using the exemption, and we're transferring appreciation, let's say, to the next generation through this technique. But if 2036 applies, it'll bring it all back into the estate, and the mitigation adjustment doesn't apply to the excess value that would be brought back into the estate. So you have to be very careful about Section 2036.
And so, you know, just for an example, you know, if you were to structure the GRIP to say that, you know, the grantor, you know, the preferred interest gets back all of the income on the entire partnership rather than, you know, a rate of return, you know, that would give me pause under 2036, because then the common interest with which they're giving away, they're also retaining the income on that. And so it's you know, things like that I think you need to be very careful of.
No, and that's extremely helpful. So I just want to be clear on the GST part. So if the partnership was worth $10 million and you made a gift of, let's say, in a normal freeze partnership, the gift would be, call it $1 million, you would allocate GST exemption to that sliver, and $9 million would be retained. In this, the gift would be $10 million, but you really can't allocate GST exemption to that because it's going to come back into the estate later, and there's, I guess, no opportunity to allocate GST exemption later?
So it's not that it's an ETIP period. You can allocate GST exemption, but the value of the gift that you're making is $10 million. And so you would have to allocate the full $10 million of your GST exemption to it. So it's not that you can't allocate. It just may not be a good use of your exemption, because depending on what that common interest will grow to, if it doesn't actually grow very much, you know, you may have wasted exemption on an asset that never really grew more than $3 million, say, right?
You really only transferred the junior equity interest, which in your example is worth $1 million, but you've used up $10 million of generation skipping exemption if you want to apply GST exemption to this transaction. So you're better off not applying GST exemption. That's just a terrible use of it. But doing other planning to capture the GST exemption and preserve it, like the Inter Vivos Q-tip Trust with a reverse Q-tip election.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion, and I want to thank you both. This is so insightful and so timely, and I think a lot of people should consider looking at this technique. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Bob Keebler with Mary O'Reilly and Steve Brightstone. If you enjoyed this podcast, we highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access additional information. Stay tuned for Andrea Miller, CPA PFS, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Our hope is that you found a valuable takeaway that helps you help your clients. Check out the show notes to find resources related to this episode. We are living through unprecedented times, and we want to know what you need most to support your clients and your business. Feel free to send an email to financialplanning@aicpa.org with topic ideas. The AICPA PFP section is the home for professional financial planners, designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your practice to the next level. To find more valuable resources, visit us at aicpa.org/PFP. If you'd like to know more about the CPA-exclusive financial planning credential, go to aicpa.org/PFS. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.